Hey, my dog's got to go to the bathroom.
Again?
She goes once a month, and it's always right now.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Cinema Faith Podcast for October 2024. I'm your host, Jonathan Buchanan, and I'm joined once again by my faithful co-host and friend, the one and only Mr. Tim Nelson. Great to see you, Tim.
Hey, good to see you, John. Do you think I should go by Timothy? Like, you're Jonathan?
I go by Jonathan or John. Is it the same for you, like Tim or Timothy, or do people usually just go with Tim?
They go with Tim. I think Timothy, you get this idea of a small child.
Right, like a mother.
Timothy! Or like Tiny Tim, even though he should have been Tiny. Timothy, what was Dickens thinking? What in the Dickens?
Well, Tim, I know I've said this before, but it bears repeating. Thanks for doing this with me every month. And I know our movies aren't always like the best to watch and endure. So, I just appreciate you rolling with it every month for us. And our listeners do, too.
I don't endure these movies. I love these movies, John.
This one, too?
It's true. But mostly, I love you, man. Aww. And I think you're great. And it's never a chore for me. It's always fun.
That's great. Thank you.
It's always a chore for you after we're done talking.
It is.
Because
it
is true. Then you edit for 1,000 hours.
Yeah, that's accurate. But I love doing it, and we do it for our fans, you know, all our many fans, Tim. They're just out there clamoring for the next one.
You can't believe, man. I get the fan mail. People have been sending me their underwear.
Totally.
But they're all men. It's just super weird.
They're men.
They're all dudes.
Sign it for me.
Yeah, they're middle-aged dads, but they're so into this, you know. They're
middle-aged
kind of like,
dads are our target audience for sure.
Yeah, they love it, and so yeah, it's really it's disconcerting because a lot of times they'll send me like a pair of tighty whities that could be like 8 years old.
Yeah,
because that's what they wear,
not washed.
And I
often
get that in the mail, and I feel like I'm being threatened by somebody, but it turns out no, that's fan mail for us.
That makes total sense. It's
our demographic. I understand.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with that.
I don't encourage it, but I'm sure it's happened to you too. I don't encourage it. I think it's relatively inappropriate, but let's just acknowledge it here.
Yep. Well, Haynes. It's October finally.
Fruit of the Loom.
Stop.
Anything that's got like, like something on the band, you know? Yeah, nothing. It's never anything like bikini briefs or anything. It's always
No.
I mean, they're the kind of underwear you could fit in like an envelope.
Mm-hmm.
So the postage is relatively reasonable. Anyway, I'm sorry.
Anyway, so it's October, best month of the year, as we've discussed many times, just kind of a fact. And you know what I was thinking about is like how much can change in a month, Tim. Like, think about it. This podcast is going to come out at the end of October, and our next show will be coming out at the end of November. And by that point, we're going to have a brand new president of the United States. It will no longer be fall, but actually like winter, and will be after Thanksgiving. By the time our listeners hear us again after this, it's just like so much can change in a month. It's crazy.
We're only like 255 podcasts from death, John.
Ooh, when you put it like that, it's brutal. But you're right. You're absolutely right. Well, for now, it's October, and let's just enjoy it. How's football going? Are you still doing the fire pits and marching bands and everything?
Yeah, marching bands and fire pits.
Isn't that great? It's just like
motorcycle jumping.
Yeah, well.
Oh, wait, not the motorcycle. I'm sorry. I'm just silly this morning, John.
I just love a football game, a high school football game. There really is nothing like it. Like the sensory just overload of it is beautiful. There it is.
Yeah, it's been good. My kid he's starting on every special team now, and he got to play a lot of defense, which I think I told you about last time. But it helps because his team, they are not the best team.
Yeah. Well, what can you do?
They struggle, which is good if you're a sophomore because that means you get more playing time.
Yes.
Because they're like, this outcome of this game is already determined. Let's throw in some sophomores into the defense.
So they're not headed for the playoffs, Tim, you don't think?
I don't think so. If they won every single game. Then maybe for the rest of the season. But my son did deflect a pass last week.
Deflect a pass. That's brilliant. I love it.
Made some good open field tackles in the varsity game. So I'm like, dang, who is this kid? So I'm very proud, Papa, because I don't do that myself very well. I mean, I could tackle people. Right. But
yeah, what was that sound you made of the penguin? I loved it. Ooh. That's it. I just wanted a reprise of that for our listeners.
That's what penguins sound like when they run. And also me, as a youngster.
Yeah.
Is this about movies or not?
No, this is about sports. I think we're just going to talk about sports. It's a sports podcast because I want to talk about my Brewers. Dude, so we're in October, and this is the, so you watch 162 games of the Brewers, right? And you're really into it, and I'm like devoting a lot of my life to them. And then they get to the playoffs, and they screw up every single time. We've won one of our last 10 playoff games. It's brutal, brutal. I think baseball's the most brutal when it comes to the playoffs because of how many games there are. You followed this for 5 months, and then just to flame out in like two games and that's it. It's so like a gut punch.
Didn't I tell you that would happen? I think I actually told you that would happen.
But listen, Tim, it didn't happen yet. I thought it was going to happen. We lost game one. I actually got free tickets to the first playoff game. Like, I was just like,
how did that happen?
Dan Baker. Shout out to Mr. Dan Baker. He got tickets from his work, from a vendor, and he was like, do you want to come? For free. And I was like, yes. So I came. They lost horrifically, 8-4. Brutal. Yesterday, we were on the verge of losing in game two because it's a best of three. And we won, Tim. So tonight is the climactic game three, win or go home, win or advance.
I'm a bad baseball fan. Who are we playing?
We are playing the New York Mets. Game three, at home, win or take all. It's going to be exciting.
A big market team.
Yeah, I know.
So I could tell you based on the pitching who's going to win.
Shut up. The Brewers. No, I don't know. I'm scared of it. But like, at least we are at home. And, you know, it's anybody's game now. So
when they start pitching pitchers for two innings and then two innings and then two innings.
That's what the playoffs are like. I know. Actually kind of nice because it's such a short leash. It's like the guy starts even slightly throwing that curve the wrong way and the manager comes right out. It's like, you're done. That's it. Get out.
Yeah. There's no season left to mess around with. Yeah.
No. So anyway, go Brewers, and I hope, you know, by the time this is our listeners hear us next, something will have happened. We'll either have won the World Series or we'll have definitely not.
Yeah.
All right. Well, one thing we can always count on, unlike sports, is hearing what we've been watching. Tim, what have you been watching lately?
Did I mention this last time that I've been watching The Sopranos again? Did I mention that?
No, you did not mention that. Nice.
It's kind of a big deal to John, I can tell right now.
I love The Sopranos. It's just a classic show. Yeah. Where are you at? What prompted you to start it?
Well, I think what prompted me to start it was I think I'm like the same age as Tony Soprano.
Mm.
And so I was like, I should give Sopranos another look. Because at first I was like, oh, this is just a mob show. It has nothing to do with the mob. It just happens to have the mob in it. It's about being middle-aged and going to counseling.
Yep.
Yeah, I identify with all that. So
marriage problems, parenting problems. That really is what the show is. And that's why it's so brilliant. Because it's not, you think it's going to be about this, but it's really about that.
Yeah, so I've been enjoying that. It's a good show. He's a very interesting character. I wish Gandolfini had lived longer.
I know.
He'd be in so much stuff.
Legendary performance, and everyone who's ever worked with him said he was just such a delight to work with, and he's just a great actor. We lost him too soon. We did.
Yeah, it's true.
Good show. Yeah, nice. All right. Well, Tim, I got a movie and a show for you. So, you remember a couple podcasts ago, we talked about our friend, mutual friend, Kyle Burnt, and he recommended another movie to me, and this movie is called Pieces of a Woman, and it stars Shia LaBeouf and Vanessa Kirby. And Vanessa Kirby was most recently in the latest Mission Impossible. She was the White Widow on the train that gets impersonated if anyone has seen Dead Reckoning. But anyway, this movie, I know, I love that movie, by the way, and you should watch it. Mission Impossible, Die Hard over here. Tom Cruise for life. Point is, Pieces of a Woman, it starts out with like 40 minutes of a home birth. And that's all I'm going to say. And then it goes from there. And it's just a very intense adult drama and with heavy performances and heavy thematic content. And that's like my jam, you know me. And so I was digging every minute of it. And Vanessa Kirby was nominated for an Oscar, but the movie itself was criminally overlooked. I'm finding with these like recommendations that Kyle's been giving me, there are some times where the Oscars just completely overlook great movies. Like, just they didn't even acknowledge it.
That's never happened, has it?
Well, I used to actually think that they get it right more often than they don't, but like there are a lot of movies that just flew under the radar, but this one was really, really good, and I highly recommend it. Pieces of a Woman, it is on Netflix. Watch it if you like really good heavy dramas like me.
Heavy drama. John, it's all drama all the time with you.
Drama all the time. I love it. I don't know what it is. Just like I could watch a whole movie, 2 hours of just people arguing with fantastic performances, like in a kitchen. Like that's why I like Revolutionary Road. It's like Kate Winslet.
Oh, yeah,
and
yeah.
Leonardo DiCaprio just arguing for 2 hours. Like that's my jam. I'm like, yeah.
You go, John. That kind of stuff makes me anxious.
I know. Most people. I'm in the minority.
No, yeah,
enough arguing.
Like, there's enough. Well, then again, I did watch Sopranos. I don't know, man. I don't know. So I have had less time to watch movies because during the sports season, I have to go pick a kid up at like 7:30 at night, and then I get really tired, and I don't have time to invest in like 2 hours. So I've been watching less movies. So maybe you have some tips for me, John. How could I watch movies?
My tip is know a friend like Kyle Burton who forces you to watch movies and then will ask you about it and hold you accountable to watching it. That's my tip because I'm the same way. Like that's why I got into TV. It's like I just want to pop on 43 minutes, not 2 hours. I just don't generally have the time. But Kyle's like, by the time you come back, I want you to watch this movie. And then I feel obligated. And so that's how I've been watching movies. So that's
Kyle has a way of getting in your head, giving you homework when you were just trying to hang out,
just
that kind of thing.
It is. But to his credit, he's picked some really good ones, and I've been grateful. All right. Secondly, a show. I started watching The Penguin on Max. Tim, it's actually really good. So if anyone remembers The Batman from, I think, 2022, Colin Farrell played The Penguin disguised under like 100 pounds of bodysuit and, you know, makeup and like completely unrecognizable. And they have put that into an 8-episode show on Max. And it's so fun because it's like not only it's just a great performance from Colin Farrell because I bet it's a delight for him because like you don't even he gets to disappear. He just to become a completely different person. And then like you also because it's on Max, you can just have this comic book world like it's Gotham, you know, city, but it's completely gritty. You can drop F-bombs, you can do whatever you want and it just feels so much more real. That was always the promise of DC as compared to Marvel is we're going to like, you know, do rated R comic books. And it's just, it feels different. I'm not saying you like have to have extreme content every time you watch something. I'm just saying like it's different than your Marvel, which is always like, no, this is for the whole family, whatever. It's nice to have an alternative, you know, where it's like, we're going to dig in deep. So it's been really good. We're only 2 episodes in, but because it comes out week to week, but it's fun.
Yeah. So I know what you're saying. You're saying you like your Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles to cut heads off.
Yeah. Once in a while. Yeah. And then also it's fun bringing the kids to a Marvel movie. Well, not anymore. Like I've given up. But, you know, back in the day, we'd be like, we're going to go watch the Avengers. So that's cool, too. So both are good. We need both.
You're saving all kinds of money, though.
Yeah. Not following that and going to every movie. Totally. Thank you, Marvel, for getting tedious and awful. I appreciate it.
Yeah. It's just awful, man.
Awful.
You remember The Hobbit?
Yeah.
You do. I know you do. You got a Hobbit problem. Frodo Baggins is a Hobbit. And he said, I feel like, what do you say? Too much butter spread over too little toast or something?
No.
How does it go,
John? It's too little butter spread over too much bread.
A great deal of toast.
Something like that. Okay, now we both screwed up. The point is, I think about that line probably once a month because I feel that. Like, the older I get, like, I know exactly what he feels like when he says that. But, it's too little butter spread over too much toast. Something like that. I love that line. That's great writing.
Do you think our podcast is too little butter?
No.
I think we got plenty of butter. I think we got butter here, man.
A lot of butter, a lot of bread. We're feasting.
We're churning it daily. Yeah, I think so too. And then what kind of toast would we be if we were a podcast?
White bread toast.
Raw Wonder Bread.
Yeah.
The kind of bread that you could like smash into a tortilla if you needed a tortilla. Yeah,
totally.
Okay.
Just being honest. I don't know.
Yeah, that's all right. That's okay.
So there you go. Those are my two recommendations. The Penguin on Max and Pieces of a Woman on Netflix. And Tim, here we are. We're here to talk about a movie now. I don't know how much we're looking forward to talking about this movie, but here we are. We're ready to talk about it. The movie is Megalopolis, and the legendary Francis Ford Coppola directed it. Of course, Coppola made The Godfather 1 and 2 and Apocalypse Now. He's a legendary director, and he invested $120 million of his own money to make this movie, and he has been trying to make it since the 1980s. And now it's time to see and talk about what he's been up to for the last 40 years with all of this.
I have a one-word review. Megaflopolis.
Yeah! That's good. I think we could just close up shop. I mean, that's what more do we need to say? Yeah.
There's another one that is even worse, which is Megaplopolis.
What does plopolis mean?
Like, it's a big turd.
Like, plop. Yeah. Right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's a turd of a movie. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. But you know what? I was actually... I was talking to Dan about this because I'm like, Tim's going to hate me that I forced him to watch this movie when he gets there, because it was too late by that point. By the time I saw it, it was way too late to back out. And then Dan was like, but it's more fun to talk about bad movies sometimes, and you guys don't do it a lot. And he's right. So here we are, and I hope our listeners enjoy it.
Man, you're going to have to lead. So I watched it, and like my brain didn't want to like retain a whole lot. Like I went to the theater, and I did a great job.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe this is brilliance, and we're going to see it in 20 years. We're going to be like, wow, we really missed the boat.
Some people think that. Like if you go online, some people think this is a closet masterpiece that we'll be talking about, and there are layers upon layers that we're just not understanding. But first, let's talk about your theater experience. So you said you went to the theater. Of course you did, because that's where it's playing. What was it like? Is there anyone in there? There's barely anyone in there for me.
So I went midday on like a Saturday, I think. Mm-hmm. I had a little bit of time being a dad and all. Yeah, I don't know. I had to eat. This is really gross, John. I'm going to tell you what I did.
Tell me.
I was really hungry and I was kind of busy that day and I didn't have time for lunch. So I walk in and I can't eat popcorn, and I wasn't into like paying movie theater prices.
Totally.
So I did something really shameful. I went to the back of the car.
Back of the car?
And I scrounged for their leftover snacks.
Tim Nelson! Timothy! What are you doing?
So, want to know what I got?
What?
A ring pop.
You got to be kidding me. That is crazy.
I'm not. I got a ring pop, but it was closed. It was sealed. But there was a bag of open rice, kind of like rice cakes with sweetness on it. And like they had been back there for like 3 days. And
3 months maybe.
And they're like kind of stale, but I'm like, nope, I got to eat this rice cake, cuz if I don't, I'm going to end up buying $50 worth of theater stuff.
Yep. These are the kind of decisions we have to make in this economy. It's like, I guess I got to go with the ring pop. I'm not spending $50 on popcorn.
So I had a ring pop and some sweetened rice cakes.
Bottom of the barrel.
It was like Tokyo Drift. Yeah,
now, did
I know.
You eat them in the back seat of the car, or did you bring this into the theater with you?
I actually did bring it into the theater.
Okay. I just see you in the back on this ring pop. It's great.
I mean, it was basically like one sip away from trash digging.
Totally.
Which I know you've done before.
No. But
oh, you're not part of that crew?
I'm not a trash digger. I bet my wife, Emily, is. She's a hippie. She'd totally be down for that. But so like, I get it. Like, I understand. I didn't even get any concessions either for this movie because like, I don't know, man. I think everyone is feeling it. It's just like, we got to start making some hard calls here. And like, we would love to get a big bucket of popcorn and a drink, but like, prices are up everywhere and you gotta just make those decisions. So I didn't get anything. I just went through it, but there was no one in my theater. There was like, I mean, there were like three people. There's like three people, but it was also very small. Like there was four rows to this theater, and this is a big movie. Like, this is a big budget movie, and like, no one's watching this movie, Tim. I mean, Megaflopolis. I think it's, yeah, it is bombing.
It was a Saturday, mm-hmm. and I had like, I mean, it was matinee, but it was Saturday,
yeah.
And I had basically any seat I wanted in that.
Exactly. Training. I know. I don't know, man. I feel bad for the guy a bit, but like, you know, maybe make a better movie. I don't know what to tell you. Like, I just, yeah. Well, I will say, though, I must give a big shout out to my friend Jason Thompson, because we've talked about him before, and he co-hosted the Hell or High Water podcast. And it's been a while. We're film buddies, so like, we'll just text randomly on and off about film, and we are both huge Francis Ford Coppola fans, so we've been actually eyeing this movie for a long time, because it's like, Francis Ford Coppola, director of The Godfather, has made a huge sci-fi epic. Yeah, we want to watch that. And so we kind of had this on our calendar to go see together for the last like 6 months, and then we did. So we saw it together. So I saw it with him, and we both sat next to each other, and we both just looked at each other at the end like, well, that was that, I guess. And yeah, that was fun. So shout out to Jason, though. And it was nice seeing it with someone. At least I didn't have to go alone like you, poor soul.
I thought it was cool. If you don't know, we're podcasting it earlier in the morning, and I stayed up too late.
Tim, I want you to know I'm right there with you. I got 4.5 hours of sleep last night, which is not enough. I watched The Brewers till late. Then I watched SportsCenter because I wanted to hear Scott Van Pelton talking to my Brewers players. Then I watched the end of another game. And then I was like, I should probably finish that outline. And then I stayed up way too late and now I'm exhausted. So, like, yeah, you're getting the worst of us, I guess, dear listeners, but we love you.
Or
and
the
we're
best
committed.
Of us.
Or the we're best of us.
We're tired and uninhibited. They could take advantage of us. That sounds so creepy.
We might say things that we'll very much regret. That's okay.
I love you, Joan. I can't quit you. That kind of thing. Yeah.
Tim, I think it's your turn to describe the plot. Go figure. So, you know.
Oh, I can't do that. I knew what you were doing.
It's your turn. Take it away. You got this.
I really can't do it,
man. I know.
It's like, it's impossible.
It is.
It's kind of like the vast, I think it's a world, just like The Godfather is a world, right? But it's just not done right.
It's not
so
that world.
Why don't you give it a shot since you wrote something down? Because this is a hard one.
So the movie takes place in New Rome, which is a cross between ancient Rome and modern day America. So they have
like
technology. New York. They have technology. They've got phones, but they're also wearing togas. And they also have brand new futuristic technology because it is like a sci-fi film. So they have this thing called Megalon, which I guess is this organic matter that they could make buildings out of, but they could also heal your face off of. And I don't know. Makes no sense. And then they have, it's also like very Shakespeare heavy for some reason. And so there's characters that are named like Caesar and
Cicero.
Right. And sometimes they quote Shakespeare. We don't know why to this day. And then there's a lot of just random stuff that happens. And basically, well, okay. So you have he definitely seems to be making a stand against like power in the hands of a few, the elites and stuff. So you have that sort of like, you know, elite class of people that are running the world, running this city, ancient Rome or New Rome. And then you have our supposed hero, played by Adam Driver, who is Caesar, and he is trying to do something new. He's trying to use this megalon that he's invented to recreate the world and recreate these cities to be more efficient and better for the lower class. And that's all I got. I mean, like, that's the plot, quote unquote, but that sounds actually more interesting than what you get when you watch
this
movie.
I'll talk a little bit about. So I think it's to me, it's like this big allegory comparing the fall of the US to the fall of Rome.
Okay, sure. Yeah,
that's the best I'll do. And then it uses the Julius Caesar play by Shakespeare, and then it also implements the Roman history, and then it uses like Greek philosophers. So there you go. Right. So you get a lot of quotes, you get a lot of, but it's really like the fall of Rome in the fall of the US are compared, contrasted. And then, yeah. And so I think we do have like a lot of overlap. There is allegory there.
Doesn't that sound so great? Just incredible nuance and dedication to the craft of filmmaking. Wonderful. Unfortunately, what that all ends up being is a gigantic hodgepodge mess, but you know, good try, good swing. So yeah, you know, what can you say? Let's talk about acting, I guess. So Adam Driver. First off, I actually really like Adam Driver. I think he's a good actor and I like his vibe. You know, he's got like gravitas that he brings to his roles. But he's also like cool and funny and charming. And I think he's good. He's got the package. So I'm a huge fan of him. I first noticed him, I think, in Inside Llewyn Davis, a movie I adore, by the way, that Dan Baker absolutely hates for some reason. And he was great. What I love most about that movie is that one scene where they record that song in like real time about the astronaut or something, or Kennedy, don't send us into space or whatever. And then Adam Driver's in the background. And he's doing these weird sound effects for the track like you would do back in the 60s. He was like, "Beep." And he's like doing the he's got that really deep voice, so I love that. And then he was, of course, Kylo Ren in Star Wars. He's nominated for an Oscar for Marriage Story and Black Klansman. Dude's great. Do you like Adam Driver?
Yeah, I like him. I feel like he should be doing more voice work. Maybe he does, and I just don't know it.
He's got a good voice for it. Yeah.
He could be like a snail or something.
A snail?
Like a sloth or something. I don't know. Uh-huh. He's just got that like super kind of like marshmallowy deep voice.
Yeah, definitely. So he plays Caesar Catalina. What do you think about his character here, Tim? What did he bring to this role?
He's like Elon Musk.
You know, that's such a good point. That Jason Thompson, who I went with, said the exact same thing. He's like Elon Musk, which is so weird because I feel like Coppola wants him to be the hero, but maybe not. Maybe I'm just wrong, and maybe like the whole point is no one's a hero and they're all just different versions of bad. I don't know what you think about that, but it feels like he makes him heroic. But to me, yes, he felt like just an arrogant egomaniac.
I know. I think there's part of this, which is we're looking at democracy, right?
Uh-huh.
And so he is a benevolent dictator in some ways. Like he has all kinds of power. He makes decisions unilaterally. He doesn't have to build consensus. He just does it.
Right.
So you have, like in ancient Rome, you have the idea of like democracy, or like a Senate-run democracy, or an emperor, right? So the question being like, what do we want in some ways? So he's like Musk, and Musk is that way too. He just does stuff. He doesn't ask for permission. He does it. He's like, Twitter's X now.
Yeah.
Live with it.
I'm building these cars for the good of humanity. I'm building these tunnels. It's just like he, and on the surface, he's like, he's trying to save the world, but he's trying to do it by himself. He's not getting consensus. He's just like, this is what we need. This is what everyone needs. The end. And then he just does it because he has the money to do it. That's exactly how Caesar feels. Now, that's interesting. So are you saying, because his name is Caesar, which I was like, why is his name Caesar? Are you saying that he represents kind of that authoritarian sort of, I'm just going to do stuff for the good of everyone? Sort of, well, Caesar,
like,
vibe.
Like a Caesar's like obviously like a king, right?
Yeah.
But it's also like referencing the play Julius Caesar.
Well, yeah.
So right. The idea is that like he has this, you know, great plan, and he has this power, and he's capable of doing all those things. But in order to get that done, he has to work kind of the politics of everything. And I mean, I think he has power, but he still has to work through some channels. But it's kind of like this great drama. And I think it's asking us the question, do we want an emperor or do we want a republic?
But the republic that he's sort of an alternative to is corrupt. And they're all just like, you know, getting drunk and wasting money and not caring at all about the lower class. And then you've got Caesar, who supposedly is trying to help the lower class, but he's not getting their approval about anything. He's not actually seeking to understand at all what they're really going through. He's just sort of like, this is the solution, and I'm going to, you know, raise all your buildings and make better ones. You'll love it. I don't know. It's right. Weird.
So, like, that's progress, yeah. So I think there's a lot of themes there. Obviously, you know, rich and poor. But I think this film came out, it's October right now. It came out in September. Is that right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And we got an election in November. I don't think this was unintentional. I think this came out with the hope of having us think about what matters. And so I think that was very much at the heart of like why the release time is when the release time is. I don't think it's Academy Award. I don't think that's what they were going for. I don't think Coppola's going for that. I think he's asking us a question. Do we want an emperor? Do we want a republic? Even if the republic is totally screwed up, would we rather have that? Or would we rather have an emperor who is powerful and magical and can do things that nobody else can do?
Mm-hmm. Because Caesar can stop time as well. Randomly, they don't explain it. He just can. Interesting.
Yeah.
To be fair, though, he has been making this movie since the 80s, so of course he couldn't have foreseen our current 2024 predicament. But I suppose these themes have been percolating for quite a while in American society.
Yeah, but I think there's themes of, like, do we want to have a strong central executive, or do we want to have a weak legislative body?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think those are, like, really huge. And I think that's not just a theme from the 80s or 90s or now. I think that's a theme that goes all the way back to ancient Rome, right?
Yeah.
Do we want to have representative democracy, or would we rather have better life through technology? So I think that we're dealing with all those things. So, and the question is, do we want to be entertained, or do we want to be participating in democracy? So there's a lot of themes. It's heavy on themes. So like when we talk about plot, we're really talking themes because it's kind of a little bit heavy handed.
It is. It's sort of like the movies is like a polemic. Like it's a direct. Coppola is concerned about these things, and the plot is just an excuse for him to sort of get into a megaphone and be like, this is what I'm concerned about. This is what's happening. But is Adam Driver good in this movie?
Yes.
He is. But I just feel like all the actors suffer a little bit from you know, bad writing and aimless plot. But I think with what they're given, they're pretty good performances. So I do agree with you that Adam Driver's good in this. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't particularly like the choice of Aubrey Plaza, actually.
You don't? Now, I was going to say that she actually takes it and runs with it because she plays this very, her character name is Wow Platinum. I mean, Francis. Wow Platinum. Okay, well, anyway, yeah, so she's kind of like ruthless and gaudy and a little trashy and, like, you know, very sexual, and like I thought she sort of just was the one that really went for broke with her character, but you weren't digging it.
No, I think she's, her strength was that, like, for a while as a young actress, she has a flat affect at the right time, so that's like funny.
Parks and Rec. But I think, yeah,
I think here you could see some of her limitations in that. And you can work around that with casting because she's like in a role that ruthless is good and flat affect is good. But generally speaking, like, I think that she's just okay. I don't see her as being amazing or anything. I wonder, and I don't know Aubrey Plaza's background, if she is Italian or not, because I could see that he would want to cast Italian folks because he does historically.
Interesting, yeah.
Italian Americans.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I this movie made me thoroughly not want to look like, dive into the research on this movie.
No, totally.
It's just like, yeah. Oh, I don't want to go down this rabbit trail. I don't like the movie enough to like try to figure out what it's about. Sorry, listeners. I failed you all.
Well, it doesn't deserve it. There are some movies that just, you know, I have better things to do with my time than give mediocre art more research. But I will say, Aubrey Plaza, like, I've never, like, super been a fan, but I didn't really watch Parks and Rec, so I don't have context there. But I will say one thing. If you want to see Aubrey Plaza give a really great performance, you should check out The White Lotus Season 2, which I have recommended here before. She is great. She's in all the episodes of that. Her character is Harper, and that is Season 2 of The White Lotus. It's a great show, and she is really good in that. It's a different side of her, and I think she knocks out of the park. So if you want to see some great acting from Aubrey
White
Plaza,
Lotus Season 2.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's talk about Shia LaBeouf as Claudio. Now, this is actually his first role since 2022. And then he was in some movie I never heard of in 2022. And then that movie was his first movie since 2020. He hasn't gotten a lot of work lately because he sort of burned all of his bridges in Hollywood. He started being way too honest about the fact that he didn't like some of the movies he was in. And then he really ticked off Steven Spielberg by bashing the latest Indiana Jones. And, you know, if you're a good pro tip for Hollywood, don't tick off Steven Spielberg. You're going to get a lot of doors slammed in your face when you go down that road. And he has not had a great career for the last 5 years. Oh, also Greta Gerwig, who's at the peak of her career with Barbie, fired him off of her latest movie because, quote, I have a no a-hole policy on my films. So not great for his reputation when you're dealing with some of the best people working today and they just do not like you.
That's a good policy. I wonder if it's written in the contracts. That's good. No a-hole policy.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm censoring that for our listeners who are, you know, conservative Christians. So
I'm sure we got a huge base.
I like to pretend. So anyway, he's been on the outs with Hollywood. All right. But the thing is, I wish that he hadn't done that because he's actually a really great actor who brings so much intensity to his roles, and I love watching him. Like, I was just talked about Pieces of a Woman. He's so good in that. Like, he brings 110% to his role. He's just apparently a total dick to work with.
Ugh. I like him, too. Like, I really do.
Yeah.
But I think that comes at a price.
Yeah.
He's the Chevy Chase of that generation.
That's right.
Just in a different genre. No, he's just, he's a great actor.
Yeah.
Like, there's no way around it. He's just a great actor.
So he plays Claudio, and it's pretty explicit that he's sort of a Trump stand-in. That's interesting because I really do feel, and maybe a lot, it's just, what would be interesting if I had actually cared enough to do research would be like, how much of this was like made, you know, this has been like a dream project of his since the 80s, but then you have these references that are very 2024. Like, Claudio is trying to be a populist, but just solely for personal gain. And when he gets what's coming to him, he actually has red hats thrown at him. I mean, you cannot get more explicit than that as far as what he represents. So that's interesting. I wonder when that was added. But yeah, so he's basically sort of a populist Trump stand-in.
I mean, it's like January 6th scenes in this thing too, right? Where people are, yeah, so it's like and I think that like you get this idea of like the rabble in ancient Rome, so like folks who are, you know, talk about rabble rousers, but you get this idea of that these are the uneducated folks that you can prey upon their passions and get them to do something for you so that you can establish more power. It's not like that you want to do something for them. You want them to do something for you. So you get them all fired up. So that, I see that, and I see the parallels to our current scenario.
Yeah, which sounds like definitely one of our presidential candidates. I will let our listeners decide which one. It could be either one of them.
Well, it could be both.
There you go.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so that's what he plays. He's sort of a trashy populist and kind of slimy and awful. And Shia LaBeouf, I think he's great. And then there are so many other actors we didn't even get to. I mean, freaking Dustin Hoffman is in this movie, and John Voight totally like hamming it up, just getting drunk and talking about having a boner, and I can't get that scene out of my mind where it's so just like, what is happening? And Giancarlo Esposito, which is Gus from Breaking Bad, he's great. He's in this. So like, you have a really great selection of actors here, and which makes me sad because
John, I got to say something to you. I don't know if we've talked about this.
Tell me.
Do you know who Giancarlo Esposito is in one of our favorite films?
Oh, you know how I know this is because Jason Thompson pointed this out to me. He is in Do the Right Thing.
He's bugging out in Do the Right Thing.
Yep.
And he is so great in that movie already. Like in 19, what is it?
When he was so young. Yeah.
89? Yeah, I think all listeners just have to go back and do that. But he's an incredible actor.
Yep.
He's in everything right now.
Yes, he is, because he's great. And just go watch Do the Right Thing. Everyone stop and go watch Do the Right Thing right now, please. It'll just cleanse your palate. It's a great way to start the day. Do it. Anyway.
And then ask yourself, what is the right thing to do in this movie?
Yeah.
And then that'll be hard for you. Yeah. It'll be easy if depending on who you are. Yeah. Sorry, we're rambling today. It's because this movie's terrible, okay?
It's because it's terrible. We're all over the place. I know, but because the movie's all over the place. Like, what?
We're trying
nothing
to escape.
To
we're trying to escape summarizing it. Like I did. I was like, oh, I don't know if I want to.
But there's just a lot of great actors in this movie, and they have nothing to do. And the characters are so paper thin. I mean, like, that's the thing. As I feel like, the problem is that really the whole movie is Coppola preaching to us. It's sort of like a bad Christian film where it's like, okay, start with the message and then we'll work out a plot and then we'll work out some characters to deliver the message. That's how this feels to me. And then so these characters just feel so thin. They don't have anything to do. Dustin Hoffman, is it even a character? Like, what? You've got this great legendary actor. He has nothing to do. Nothing. It's really
like cameos with Dustin Hoffman. Yeah. I also don't like that we're getting cued all the time in it.
Cued.
Like by like quotes. Like they're here's some quotes.
Right.
Here's some quotes and here's some quotes.
Voiceover. Terrible voiceover. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just too bad. I just feel like it's just disjointed and weird. Let's take another movie that we reviewed, which was, what's the one about the apocalyptic democracy movie that has, what's her name, Kirsten Dunst in it?
Civil War. Yeah.
Civil War gets the point across.
Yes.
And it's a similar point.
That is such a good point. Yeah, totally.
Yeah. So if you want to see, and how much was Civil War?
I mean, not as much as that. No, absolutely.
No,
it was the
not
most expensive
close.
A24 film, but even that was like 30, 40 million. I mean, you're making it on a budget, right?
Right. So for the, you know, a quarter of the price, you can go see Civil War, and it's a hell of a fun movie to see, and it gets the same ideas across. It actually critiques, because one of the critiques in the film that we're looking at here is the press. They're critiquing the press as just being self-seeking.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Civil War is going to give you that too. It's going to like engage those questions in a more fun format with way better action and better conversations and better characters that have depth to them. That's the movie you should watch if you want to get into this dialogue, is watch Civil War.
Yeah.
I think that has more, and it's less preachy because you don't know who's who in this whole thing. So yeah.
Well, it's what we always say when I hate picking on them, but it's what I always say about Christian movies that drive me crazy is that it's always like we start with the message, we start with the preaching, and then we work around it. Whereas what you want to do, like that is Civil War, is where you start with a story, you start with good art, you start with good characters, and out of that comes the message. Out of that comes power. You know, you don't need to force it. Just make good art and the message comes. Like, yeah. It's just, yeah, that's all you need.
Oh, man.
I know.
Yeah, I'm disappointed, man. I'm disappointed in this film.
Me too. Let's talk about The Man in the Hour. Francis Ford Coppola. All right, look. The reason I wanted to see this movie is, like, I freaking love this guy. Like, he has made movies that redefined what cinema means to me. I remember watching The Godfather 1 and 2 when I was in college. I remember watching Apocalypse Now. I mean, these movies will be around forever. They are perfect. They are masterpieces. And when you watch them, you know, there's movies that everyone talks about, and then you're like, yeah, it's going to be great. But then you watch and you're like, I get it. I get why people talk about these movies. It's because you're actually watching the ultimate higher level of art. And it just blew my, these movies blew my mind. And so, you know, and there's movies I didn't even see of his that I know are great. The Conversation, I still have been meaning to get around to that. The Outsiders, you know, so he's made so many good movies. And so I feel like when a filmmaker has done that, he deserves a chance. And especially if this is his passion project, he deserves for us to sit down and give it a chance. And that's what we did, but it didn't go well. I don't know what to say.
Yeah, it's Heart of Darkness. Is that the Apocalypse Now
documentary? That's the making of Apocalypse Now. That's correct, yeah.
So, like, he had all the success of The Godfather, which are, like, they're perfect. The first two are perfect movies.
Perfect.
Like, there's everything about them is perfect. They get all the, yeah, they're perfect. And, which get referenced in The Sopranos, so we're coming full circle here. Okay.
Nice.
So they're perfect movies based on a novel, which might be helpful, Puzo's novel. Yeah, so maybe he needs, like, and then Apocalypse Now is loosely based on Heart of Darkness by Joseph Conrad, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, but set it with a Vietnam backdrop.
Right.
So I think maybe what he needed, and I don't know if this wasn't a novel, was it?
No. This is his own, totally his own thing.
I got this feeling that, like, maybe he just needs more structure, things to hang things on, and that would have helped him more. I think that's true as any kind of creative is if you get too much, if you have all the paints, then you end up painting with all the paints.
Now, some people can do it. Some people just have that side of their brain that can do it. Paul Thomas Anderson writes and directs his own stuff. He doesn't need books or whatever. He's just like, you know, and he's just mm-hmm. operating from that level where he can bring brilliant, fresh, new stories to us. But some people need that. And I think overall Hollywood needs that because that's why books are such high property in Hollywood because, like, I mean, they're mm-hmm. just scooped up. Whenever you got a great book, that's going to be, they're going to pay top dollar for it because there's the heart of your movie.
Yeah. Just like if you watch that documentary, we've talked about it before, Heart of Darkness documentary. Then you're going to see, like, his process is miserable.
Yeah.
And that's when he's, like, at the height of his, like, powers. He has a miserable creative process, and he's always second-guessing himself, and it's just a terrible process that is, like, damaging to him.
Mm-hmm.
So it felt like this movie has to be that way, too.
Yeah, totally. I mean, no, it's true. And even in Heart of Darkness, like, I just saw a clip of that for whatever randomly on Facebook is fortuitous. But he was actually just sitting there talking about how, like, you know, people are going to think of me this way and, like, they're going to call me pretentious. So, like, but that's the wrong avenue to, like, be thinking that meta about yourself. And I just feel like, yeah, he's just kind of too into himself in this movie and he's not thinking about the art enough. I don't know. I was wrong, though, when I said on the last podcast that he hasn't made a movie in 20 years. That was incorrect. He has been making movies, but they're just movies no one's ever heard of. Twixt, Distant Vision, Betwixt Now, Tetro. No one's heard of these movies. I don't know where they're even being released. I don't know where they came from.
They sound like Nicolas Cage movies.
Yes. I wish he started him. That would be cool.
Twixt with Nicolas Cage.
Well, isn't Nicolas Cage really? He's related to them. He's their cousin.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what's going on. Maybe Nick Cage is getting in, like, kind of whispering in his ear.
I remember famously Nicolas Cage was like, he said that he walked into Francis Ford Coppola's office and he was like, I deserve to be in movies. We're family. And they were like, no, absolutely not. And then he was like, I had to work my way up because they didn't give me any opportunity. It's interesting.
He worked his way all the way up to buying a T-Rex. T-Rex skull.
The T-Rex skull and going
and then it all fell times. And then it all fell apart. Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. To me, the movie feels like just a bundle of contradictions. When I walked out of it, that's what I felt. It's like, but feels both big and small at the same time. It's like both serious and silly. It's dense and slight. It's just like contradictions at every turn. It feels like if you gave a student filmmaker like $100 million and you're like, go make a movie, this would be his like first big statement movie and would be very flawed. The writing isn't good. Some of the lines really stand out for just being sophomoric, honestly. The acting is the best it can be under the circumstance, but what are you going to do? There's just random montages. Oh, I guess Caesar's going to go on a drug trip now for 10 minutes. Okay. Then there's going to be a montage of him working on Megalon. He's going to be working in the office. And then this movie.
It doesn't make any sense to me, John.
Yeah.
It just doesn't make any sense. There's no economy to this movie that drives anything to anything.
Right. You talk all the time about old white guys, you know, and you're like, we got to stop giving these old white guys a chance. I think I get it now, you know, because you have this like, I have such a fondness for them because, like I said, they made these movies that expanded my idea of film, that blew my mind, Spielberg, Coppola, Scorsese, but they're just not making good movies anymore. I mean, Scorsese is, but like every single movie of his is a B+ these days, you know, and Spielberg, I actually did like The Fablemans, but like before that, there was like a 20-year drought of actually like movies worth talking about. So I don't know. I feel like it's time to pass the torch. It's just time. We got to stop. There's a new generation of filmmakers. They're doing better things, and we just need to stop giving them a chance, I guess. I don't know.
We need to put them out to pasture.
Yeah. They did their time. It's okay. Just retire and just enjoy.
There's a scene in The Godfather where Don Corleone dies in the tomatoes, happy.
Just falls off that chair. That's right.
He's spraying for bugs. He's pruning, and he dies in the tomatoes with a grandkid. Do you remember this?
I totally remember that. That's in the first one.
The reason it stands out, it's like the only peaceful scene in the entire movie. Everything else is tension.
And then the camera just lingers on him after he dies with like the bugs kind of in the background and the breeze.
Yeah, it's breeze and quiet and peaceful and sunny. That's not The Godfather. The Godfather's not that.
Yep.
That's what we need with these filmmakers. We just needed them to die in the tomato plants.
I agree. That sounds terrible. I don't want them to die, to be fair. I just want them to stop making movies and give that money to other people who make better movies. You know, my favorite things to do is watch movies with my kid. And he really likes, he has the patience to watch slower movies like old school movies, but he prefers movies with faster cuts like Fight Club, movies that are just bam, bam, going. You know, the Darren Aronofsky type movies, Fincher, that kind of style.
Except with and, high, fast pace.
Yeah, and I feel like that is kind of the churn that happened in the late 90s and 2000s as we kind of churned to a new style of filmmaking where it's more of that. And we kind of moved away from the old school, let the shots linger and linger and linger. And I think that's okay. I think both are fine, but it's okay to just embrace the new way and the new filmmakers. And we don't need to spend $100 billion on a bad movie anymore.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, what else do we got to talk about with this movie, John? I don't know what else is left.
Well, we should probably talk about some themes. But first of all, I will say, you know, in our last podcast was I saw the TV glow. And
yes.
It's interesting because that's a millennial filmmaker. That's a very much like a new wave filmmaker, right? So they tweeted on X, this is the quote, Megalopolis is the movie equivalent of when you go to an old person's house and it has a weird smell. That was really
good.
You're
so correct about that. Wow. Wow.
Jane Schoenbrunn just killing it with their take. So, yeah.
And like too much stuff. Like it's like over, like it's like you get stuff. It's like hoarder.
Hoarder. Yes. Yeah. And the couches have the plastic and you're just like, I don't like this. I just don't want to be
here.
The
carpet has stains, like trail stains on it.
And it's green. Yeah.
Yes.
Yep.
Wow. We're ageist, aren't we?
I know. I don't mean to do that because honestly, you know, I just quoted Aronofsky and Fincher. They're actually getting up there. They're in their 50s. So it's not about age per se. It's just about, I don't know what it is. It's just about like, what is it, Tim? Like what if it's, because I really don't think we're being ageist. I just feel like there's a point where they got to give it up. Like they're just, they're past the prime. Yeah. I don't know. You see it with bands even. You see it with all the forms.
If we use generative stages, right? Like Erickson, life stages, then
yeah,
there is a generative stage, which is usually like 35 to 55 or whatever, I think. I'm not sure. I'd have to review that. And so where people are producing a lot of stuff, like we're doing a lot of things, we're in the generative stage. I don't know what I produce, but you produce something, I'm sure. You help people buy homes. I mean, that's fantastic.
Sure.
You're like the guy from It's a Wonderful Life.
Hardly.
You're the George Bailey of the modern era.
I am not George Bailey.
Well, I don't know.
I wish I was George Bailey, but because I love him and he makes me cry every year because I'm like, I need to be more like George Bailey.
But I think there is like there's this generative phase and then there's a phase that's more reflective as you get older. And where you don't, and unfortunately, part of the reflective phase is you don't give a rat's underwear about what anybody thinks, which mm-hmm. can be really rough if you're trying to edit a film.
It's both good and bad, right? It's good in the sense that you're no longer trapped by other people's opinions, but it's bad in the fact that you think your opinion is the only one that counts. And so when someone maybe comes along and is like, have you thought about the fact that this is terrible? That you might be like, well, that's just your opinion, man.
Or you might just not care that it's terrible. Whoa.
Mm.
Because you're like, eh, I don't care. This is fun. This is cool. I like how I'm doing it, and I'm just going to do it how I like.
Yep. That's dangerous. It's a danger zone.
It's a highway to the danger zone.
All right. Well, let's try to wrap up with some themes. Well, we won't spend much time on it because, honestly, there's very but little to grapple onto here. But we've already sort of touched on it. I do feel like the movie's Coppola, rather, is trying to make a statement about class warfare, sort of like in the sense that our society and a lot of societies and even our corporations are very much centered around, you know, a few people at the top have a lot and the rest of us are getting sort of like the breadcrumbs of that, you know, and you see this in America, you see this like at corporations where like, you know, it'll be like, oh, well, we're doing real bad. The company's doing real bad. We got to take away the raises or you have like six figure, you know, politicians who are making like $250,000. They're like, we got to take away the food stamps from the people who are making like $30,000. And they act like this is what we have to do. Like, we, you know, we got to balance our books. It's like, and no one even has the conversation that's like, well, do you need your $250,000? Does the president of the company need to be making $1 million a year? You know, no one even has that conversation. It's like, well, that's all baked into the cake. The rest of us, we got to suffer. So I definitely think he's going after that. That's one thing.
Yeah, I don't know. That like might be like a, that's kind of like a the Marxist approach to it, right? So like where you're like, it's about class warfare. It's about the, I mean, it might be. My thing is, I think I tend to look at it more like, what is democracy? What do we want out of this?
Okay. So more about how do we structure a society? How should we structure a society?
Right. So you have an underclass that is clearly in the movie, and they are being hurt by an overclass, which is kind of what you're talking about.
That's what I'm saying.
But like,
yeah.
So like, and then the people are being used as a tool for that class. So rather than being represented by that class.
I feel like that's exactly what I just said, Tim, it's just in different words. But okay, it's fine.
But I like it when I say it.
I know. You did say it better, to be fair.
Well, you were talking about like classes and stuff. I'm thinking of like just democracy in general. So like whether you're rich, whether you're poor, we should have a representative democracy. Some people want a direct democracy. I don't know if I want that. But the idea being that like we actually make our choices for leaders directly and then they legislate accordingly. And that we're not living with a Caesar.
Exactly. And I do think when it comes to politics, that one thing that conservatives say a lot, which I think is a good point, is that back in the day, your politicians would be regular people. You would go and you would take a year to do your service, leave your farm or whatever, and you would go represent the people. And I think there really is something to that because we need leaders who are not disconnected from what is actually going on. You know, Caesar has no idea what these people are going through, but he has the solutions for them. And then you have the other people who are just basically getting drunk all day. So I do think there is something to that where we need true representation for people and their voices need to be heard.
Yeah. So I think asking those questions is great. I think this movie is just sloppy. It's like we were like, I feel like it's like a bucket of ideas thrown at your face.
That's
they
it.
They all stink.
And it stinks and it's slimy and it doesn't feel good. Yeah.
And it doesn't have any semblance of connection to itself. Yeah. It's just a bucket of slop. Wow. That's really bad. Megaslopolis.
Megaslopolis. We did Megaplopolis, which I love, and Megaslopolis. What does the megalon represent? You know, what is it progress? Is it change? Like, I'm trying to figure out what that is a symbol for. This, like, substance that Caesar has created. I don't know.
I don't know. It's like, so basically it can change, right? Into whatever you want it to be. Whoa.
Okay.
It can do good and it can do evil. And it's technology, right? So that we tend to worship that technology.
Right. Technology. That might be it.
Yeah. So it's like, do we lose democracy? So that's another thing we could hit, which is, can democracy bear the burden of technology, of high levels of technology and connection?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if it can.
There's all these studies that are coming out for the younger generation where they're interviewing them, and they're actually point blank admitting they wish the internet didn't exist. They wish Facebook, Instagram, TikTok didn't exist. Like, these mm-hmm. are young people saying that. It's like we realize that we're addicted to these things and that they're just sort of like a part of us, but we also know that we don't like it and they don't make us feel good. So I do think there's a sense where technology is always seen as the savior. It's we have to have it, but then it's actually hurting us. And so that's more intelligent than what the movie represents. But yeah,
I think there's also a theme of like pleasure and being over pleasured. So like there's a whole class of people, which you find in ancient Rome too. Like we talk about this, like Dionysian feasts. And even if you look at, like, I was watching a show, one of my fall asleep shows, and it basically just looks at all these Roman epitaphs, like, and they're mostly written in like Koine Greek. There's a lot of them that are like all about pleasure. Like this person loved to drink and they were, and enjoyed sex quite a bit. Like that's on their like tombstone. And I'm like, oh, okay. Party on. But the idea of that, like, there's a class of people who are just devoted to just pleasure and carnal delight and what else? Yeah. And looking good and taking the selfie. Like there's all these selfies that are occurring in this movie
mm-hmm.
and that class has power, which is weird.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a threat to democracy.
Sure.
I think. And it was in ancient Rome too.
Yeah. I mean, I always struggle with it because I think that, you know, it's everything's permissible, not everything's beneficial. I think, like, you know, we have taste buds, we have genitals. There, pleasure is built into us, and there's nothing wrong with enjoying pleasure, but there is a point where it's excessive. It gets in the way of what matters, and yeah.
Well, it's like if that's everything, that's lousy.
Right. That's it. Yeah.
If there's nothing more, that's it. That's then you're basically like you're just living according to drives.
Yeah. I always thought that was the best. I heard a definition of worldliness. You know, the Bible always talks about worldliness, and it's living as if this is all there is. And I do think that is accurate. And I think that's what you're getting at, is that like if you act like this is it, this is all that matters, is just the next high, you're missing something.
Yeah. I don't know. It's a good thought.
All right,
man,
Tim.
I got nothing.
Let's just wrap
nothing.
It up. I mean, honestly, what more is there to say? It's just, ugh. What are your final thoughts on this wonderful movie we watched and your letter grade, Tim, please?
My final thoughts are I just really, really fell asleep almost twice in this movie.
And I don't blame you for that.
At midday.
The nap would have been more beneficial for you than finishing it.
It would. It was so much money to spend on something that was so crappy. And it's really a bummer. And I say, don't give this guy any more money. I mean, spend your own money. Have him. He needs to just go to his vineyard
and die.
Spray for bugs. Clip some of the grapes. Drink a glass of wine, and then die next to a grandkid. Don't you think that would be where, like, how I want him to go out?
If we were actually like a popular podcast, that would be the quote. They would be like, "Cinema Faith says Francis Ford Coppola should die."
Yes, but no, peacefully, and maybe, you know, get a decent cinematographer to capture it.
That'd be nice.
We can think of him like Don Corleone at that point, instead of how we think of him now, which is, see, that's the thing. You can mar your legacy so quickly with these dumbass.
I know.
Excuse my French. With these projects that are like so self-centered.
Definitely. So what would your letter grade be?
D. Solid okay. D. It's a D. There's too much good acting to be an F, but it's a solid D.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I agree. I thought this movie was just a big jumbled mess with very little to say about anything because it's just incoherent. And there's just a bunch of ideas just thrown in a blender and then thrown on us, the poor audience. And we don't like it. And just give this money away to people who are really actually still doing good art. And I think that I would give it, I'm going to give it a C because, I mean, look, I didn't think it was unwatchable in the sense that, like, I was interested in what was coming next. I thought the actors were interesting. There are moments that, like, so I've seen movies that are so boring and awful that you really just can't even watch it. So, like, I'm not saying that's what this is, but, like, nothing about this works, and it doesn't come together, and I'm going to give it a C. Don't watch the movie. Don't go see this movie. Even if you're, like, the biggest fan of Francis Ford Coppola, like I am, don't go see this movie. You're wasting your money. You're wasting your time. If you want to throw $4 on a rental when it comes out, okay. But, ugh.
Yeah. Two ughs. That's how we'll do the great. It's a flopolis.
It's a flopolis. It's a megaplopolis. Yeah. It's a megaslopolis.
It's all that.
It's bad.
It's all that. It's a bucket of slop.
There's so many better movies to see. You could spend 2 hours enriching your life. This will not do that for you.
I wouldn't slop pigs with this movie.
Yes.
That's our quote.
That's it.
I wouldn't slop the pigs with this movie, metaphorically.
All right, Tim. So here's the thing. Let's work this out in real time with our listeners listening in. I was thinking, I'm going out for my birthday, as I do in October, with Dan Baker and Dave McDonald, and we're going to see Joker 2. Joker 2 with Lady Gaga and Joaquin Phoenix. Now, we did love the first one, and I am very interested to see what they do with the second one. But are you okay with this? Are you going to endure? Are you okay with that choice?
Yeah, I'll do. I like Joaquin Phoenix enough to watch him.
Okay, good.
Lady Gaga's all right.
Yeah, then that's the plan. We're going to do Joker 2. That'll be our November show. And then I'm going to find some Oscar movies first because we will be thick in the season. So December and January and maybe February, we will find some very good Oscar films and talk about them. So that is your plan for the next few months here. Thanks for listening. Don't see this movie.
No.
Don't really listen to this podcast. I don't know if we've brought anything valuable to say because it's just it's terrible. It's like the movies. What are you going to do?
I've never felt so bland in a podcast as we just did.
It's our worst show. It's because
we like mirrored the movie, man. So as bad as this podcast is, everyone, it's not this film. Okay. Yeah. So we have this film to say, no, this is worse than this podcast about this film.
Yeah.
You spent an hour now with us and it was a better hour spent than watching the film. We promise you.
And it wasn't good. It was not good.
It wasn't
good.
A good podcast. And the film's worse.
Such a great way to end. All right. Keep the faith, my friends.
You're going to need the faith, my friends.
We will see you next time.